In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Monday, February 4th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, exploring the quadrennial government technology reviews released by ACT-IAC and focusing today on the healthcare costs in particular. My guest to talk about it today, the leads one of the topic leaders of the Improving Population Wellness and Reducing Growth in Healthcare Costs, QGTR paper, Dr. Tom Love, co-founder and CEO of Shoulders Corporation. Tom, it's great to see you. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And Ann Reed, of the president CEO of Ann Reed Consulting and a former chief information officer at the Agriculture Department. Ann, it's good to have you back on the program. Thanks
glad
for coming
to
in today. Ann, why don't we start with you and tell me about the quadrennial government technology review series that ACT-IAC has put together.
Well, a little over a year ago, a group of us came together under the auspices of ACT-IAC, and more specifically, their newly launched Institute for Innovation, to consider how we could bring the talents and knowledge of industry together to support the next administration, whether it be at the next Obama administration, as of course it is, or a new administration. We'd done a review 4 years previous, and it had proved useful to some of the incoming leaders in the administration. We thought, well, 4 years, it's time to do another one. So that's what we did.
The one that we're going to talk about today, I mentioned, pertains to healthcare costs. There are a series of others. How did you decide which of the topics was worthy of the time and energy that goes into putting something like this together?
We spent quite a bit of time as a steering committee group thinking about how to approach it. And what we decided was that this is it's not about the technology. It's about solving the nation's most critical challenges, about how technology can be brought to bear to bring solutions, to bring ideas, to bring capability that might not otherwise be there. So that's where we began. What are the nation's biggest challenges? And then from there, how can we help?
Tom Love, Ann has been here before talking about this process, and it's great to have her back. But I'm particularly interested in the topic of healthcare costs. This is something, obviously, that this administration will be paying a lot of attention to as it implements the Affordable Care Act and a number of other initiatives, both across the civilian and agencies and DOD. Tell me about your role in working on this and essentially the principles that the team that put this together followed in what to look at and how to approach it.
Well, I'd like to start off by saying that, you know, we assembled a group of about 30 people back, I think, as early as March. And we had weekly meetings, if not more often, at least once a week, up until the end of October. So this was quite a lot of time and effort that was spent in thinking about what are the critical problems related to health IT and what we as a group could recommend to the government that might make a real difference.
All right. So let's start with the thing that I think was the newest information to me. And we talked about it a little bit before we went on the air. I've done myriad interviews on big data and the implications for agencies on big data. This paper, which we have linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, talks at length about the concept of little data. Why don't we get a definition of what little data is relative to big data and in and of itself, and then talk about what that means in the context of what you looked at here. You want to start, Tom?
Sure. So we'll start from a healthcare perspective. You can think about gathering population analytics and doing analyses there to be able to discover various trends or various correlations or come up with information that might suggest the possibility of a pandemic or some such thing. So that's how big data is typically used in the healthcare world. Little data, as contrast, is what we came up with that term as a way of thinking about the current situation in which you have tiny little devices that you can put on your belt or some other place to keep track of how many steps you're making each day, how many flights of stairs you're going up and down, how well you're sleeping at night, and inner all that information can be consolidated with other devices that you might have, like blood pressure monitors or scales to measure your weight.
Now, as you said the words tiny little devices, you held something up, and it looks like a little thumb drive, a USB drive. Tell me about that.
Or if you were older, it would look like an eraser that you might have used in first grade.
But right? Nobody uses those anymore. Right. Just backspace. Tell me what that is, though, because that's a fascinating little device.
Well, it's an interesting example, and this is an old version that's there. There's now smaller ones even, but it's called a Fitbit. And it actually it will work for about 10 days on a single charge, and it's continuously gathering data about literally how many steps you're taking and how many flights of stairs you're going up and down, how many calories you're burning, and you can see the data plotted by day, by hour, by month, by year. You can also and I think one of the things as a group we began to think about the issue of how to improve the health of the population, and one of the ways that is really important, I think, is that devices like this now exist to be able to capture personal data. You're not relying on, I did a lot of exercising last week. That's not quite the same thing as I did, 73,514 steps.
Let me just sort of take it up a little bit of a notch to put this in context.
Sure.
Because one of the things that I believe is really significant about what this team did was, I think typically when you talk about technology and healthcare, you're thinking about record-keeping systems or big data, like what you were just talking about. And here what the team said, if you're going to move the needle in cost, it's going to require changing individual people's behaviors. So how do you do that? How do you get people to be more self-aware of their own, what they're doing themselves to help their improve their health? Because the only way to truly move the needle is by prevention of disease rather than by actually treating the disease. The prevention is going to save ton of money and increase people's quality of life significantly.
And this is an issue that people have been talking about in the healthcare world for a long time from the provider perspective, but I'm not sure how long it's been connected to the cost curve end of the discussion. Is that fair to say?
The statistic that we quickly uncovered that was really a mind blower was that 80% of the cost of healthcare in the United States result from seven specific diseases or categories of diseases. And five of those are actually considered to be preventable. And so if you look at that combined with population demographics and the national debt problem and others, if there's five of the seven critical disease categories that could be significantly reduced or even eliminated, that would make a huge difference. And so then that then led to the discussion of, well, what could IT people actually do to contribute to this? And that's how we got into to thinking about little data and thinking about the ways in which information technology could help departments and agencies of the federal government as well as commercial organizations.
When you talk about it, too, in that context, Tom, it occurs to me that there are a couple of dynamics at play here, and I want to explore a few of those when we come back with Tom Love and with Ann Reed, both of them participating in the QGTR process with ACT-IAC, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. With no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring, I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified. So I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Come back to Foggy Bottom for homecoming at the George Washington University on February 9th and 10th in 2013. Join GW Men's Basketball on Saturday, February 9th, when they take on the Butler Bulldogs and commemorate the 20th anniversary of their trip to the Sweet 16. The GW Women play Butler on Sunday and celebrate the 40th anniversary of Title IX. Visit gwsports.com/homecoming and get your homecoming tickets today.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPInc.com. That's NITPInc.com for more information.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. New 508 regulations and new White House buying policy will get expert insight into whether it'll all help people with disabilities access federal systems. Plus, the new BlackBerry Z10 goes on sale in another month or so. It's nifty, all right, but will it lure back federal users who left their first love? Those stories and more Monday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today from ACT-IAC, Dr. Tom Love and Ann Reed, and we're talking about one of the papers in the Quadrennial Government Technology Review, the Institute for Innovation at ACT-IAC, putting one out called Improving Population Wellness and Reducing Growth in Healthcare Costs. And this has a number of implications for the federal government that we'll talk about throughout the course of our conversation today. Tom, you mentioned, though, before the break, the 80-20 rule. And I wanted to go there first, and then I want to talk about some of the dynamics that are at play here. What struck me about what is included in this document on the 80-20 rule, where you mentioned earlier 80% of healthcare expenditures come from 7 chronic diseases. Those are cancer, mental disorders, diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, pulmonary conditions, and stroke, as they're listed in the paper. Now, the mental disorders is the one of the 7 that we can't really estimate costs.
And some of the cancers.
Okay.
So there's 5 of the 7 that we think can be radically reduced and or eliminated by substantial changes.
And I was also struck by the fact that this says, based on historic trends, it's possible to accurately project the cost of treating 6 of these chronic conditions. So we have a fair degree of certainty about what we as a nation and what the federal government as the government will spend on health care costs for the foreseeable future, from what it sounds like.
Right. It's like predicting how many people are going to go to first grade 5 years from now, since they go to first grade when they're 6, and they would have already automatically been born already, you can pretty accurately predict there might be some variation based upon, you know, people moving in and out, but by and large, you can predict with great accuracy. And the same is true here, that you've got baby boomers that are getting older, and we can predict that people that are, you know, 65 this year are going to be 70 in 5 years.
Are the same things that are affecting the people at a particular age affecting them to the same level that they have historically? Are those norms consistent?
It's a real problem, is that the incidence of the seven chronic diseases that we believe can be controlled by changes in behavior and diet and things like that are actually occurring earlier in life. So you're finding there's more obesity among 14-year-olds than there was 10 years ago. The rate of obesity among veterans, for example, in the last 10 years has changed dramatically. The VA publishes a map and shows the rate of change of obesity on a state-by-state basis in the country. And it's astonishing, the rate of change. And so not only do we know what the problem is and we know how large the problem is, but we also know the rate at which it's getting worse, and it's dramatic.
The changes that are happening in the population are reflected, too, in the changes that we're seeing in the makeup of the federal government. During open season this year, I talked to some folks with some of the insurance companies, and they said right down the line, and the same factors that are affecting the general population we see in the people that we insure in the federal government.
Yeah, absolutely. And the federal government is, the largest employer in the United States? Has a real opportunity to set an example in how it works to motivate individuals to change their behaviors. And I mean this in a positive sense. I know we talked a little earlier about some of the concerns about control or the wrong kind of information in people's hands that is very intensely private. I think where we're going is back to that little data. Mm-hmm. If you help people to understand the impact of a few changes that will have on the quality of their life, I think it will make a significant difference in the decision points they make. I mean, whether it's putting the ingredients on labels or on menus, or whether it's finding ways to incentivize people to carry little devices like Tom and I carry, that the government has an opportunity to be a player in a positive way to help improve the quality of people's lives and the length of people's lives at the same time.
There are a couple of dynamics, as I mentioned before, that I want to explore for a couple of minutes. One of them is privacy. And, you know, Tom, your device is pretty neat. Who all can see the information that's included on it without your permission? Is there anybody
Nobody.
Okay, so nobody can get access to knowing what's on there about you.
I mean, maybe a programmer within the Fitbit organization knows how to gain access to the information, but no, it would take a serious hacker to figure out how to get access to it, and there are no known instances.
And do we know if there's an aggregation of that information, and does the Fitbit company...
No,
collect all of that.
They guarantee that it's kept in an encrypted form, and it's only provided to specific individuals that you identify.
Okay, so what I'm taking away from that is we have the advantage of the little data portion of this in exchange for that privacy, and it sounds like we may be giving up some of the advantages of the big data if that's not being collected anyplace, and we can leverage that at some. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing necessarily. I'm just pointing out the fact that it exists.
My hope would be that by incentivizing people at the individual level, the benefits are going to show up in the macro data, because you're going to see a lower incidence of disease and you will see costs begin to come down as a result. So you don't need to directly manage individuals' behavior or collect all of this data. You still got the data that's out there, and hopefully it'll begin to show the results when people start making different kinds of decisions about how they live.
The other element, the other dynamic that I think is a potential roadblock, maybe, is the idea of the federal government having a word or an opinion about how this information goes. But as I step back and think about it.
We were quite careful, and we were thinking about what recommendations to make, is that we didn't want to recommend a specific thing that departments and agencies of the federal government should do. What we said was, you should be doing something that we can measure and we can see that you're affecting positive change. You decide what to do, and we'll see if it works, and then we'll share that information among both other departments and agencies of the government as well as commercial organizations.
A word that we haven't used that is relevant here is that concept of wellness. And you'll find that many companies, many of our IAC member companies, have invested in wellness programs. And they do that, one, for all the reasons we've just been talking about. All the reasons we're talking about, from the having their employees have better health, which obviously has better result for the employee, but the business as well. And they have seen, by investing in wellness, costs have come down.
We're going to talk more about that concept because wellness is in the title of this paper, and it is pervasive throughout the text of it. And we'll talk about connecting some of these dots when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Love and Ann Reed, the title of the paper is Improving Population Wellness and Reducing Growth in Healthcare Costs. It's a product of ACT IAC's Institution for Innovation. We'll talk more about it in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Jeff Eisensmith, Chief Information Security Officer, Department of Homeland Security, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by SourceFire.
I think a rising star is going to be cyber kill chain. It takes advantage of two really major things here: knowledge management of what has gone down before and anticipating what's coming at us. And it also gives you real-life metrics that we're able to build real business cases of what we need to get the infrastructure where it should be.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to Federal News.
When it comes to cyber threats, the reality is that if you can't see it, you can't protect it. Don't let your organization be compromised by fighting today's cyber threats with yesterday's technology. Security for the real world means addressing the entire attack continuum, before, during, and after an attack. SourceFire provides government agencies with intelligent security to reduce attack surfaces, control threat vectors, and enforce policies. Download a complimentary Gartner white paper on addressing the full attack continuum with the power of big data at sourcefire.com/federal.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Federal employees who take mass transit to work are eligible for a $240 per month subsidy. This now matches the amount feds can be reimbursed for parking expenses. The current transit subsidy runs through the end of the year and is retroactive to January 2012. The benefit had decreased to $125 per month after Congress failed to renew it last year, but a provision in the latest fiscal cliff deal reversed it.
The start of a new year is one of the best times to review the state of your financial affairs. Unfortunately, many individuals overlook one of the most important aspects of their financial plan, life insurance. WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Bender Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics ticket office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
Active Families, Active Kids, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Kids have a lot of energy, but may not always be motivated to be active. However, when parents are active, kids are more likely to join in. Shelley Full is Executive Director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Kids do what we do, not what we say.
Playing active video games is one way to burn calories.
Choosing games for your family where the entire family can be utilizing that gaming system, getting that quality family time, and being active together, what's better than that?
Parents and kids alike can start making activity a habit by earning their Presidential Active Lifestyle Award, also known as PALA Plus. The Plus incorporates good nutrition practices.
We encourage you to be active 30 minutes a day for adults, 60 minutes for kids, 5 days a week for 6 weeks.
Learn more at fitness.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Congratulations.
congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Love and Ann Reed of ACT IAC both here talking about the latest, one of the latest products of ACT IAC's Institute for Innovation, improving population wellness and reducing growth in healthcare costs, and the potential implications for the federal government there are obvious as we talk more about healthcare. One of the things that we discussed before the break is this concept of wellness and the lack of focus that we've seen on it so far. And there are any number of different reasons for that that you write about in this paper. I want to start with the concept of information technology applied to wellness. And Tom, I'll ask you first. We as I mentioned, we've talked about big data. You explained little data earlier. During the break, you coined a new phrase that I want you to talk about. And just give me kind of an overview of the potential for information technology to help at the – because we're learning new IT processes and we're learning this new wellness process at the same time.
Right. So where to start there? I think what we're seeing is the opportunity to gather some very high quality data that could be extremely useful in what my physician friends refer to as evidence-based medicine. Right now, a lot of the evidence that's gathered in the medical world is actually subjective evidence. In the initial diagnostic phase for many patients, you're relying on the patient telling you that they smoke four cigarettes a day and drink two cans of beer instead of, 16 cans of beer and 14 cigarettes or whatever the number is. And so I think to the extent that we can get more accurate information, then everybody in the system can actually do a better job. There's an increasing number of physicians that are beginning to believe that they need to have systems that support them that have real intelligence built into them and real information built into them, because it's very hard to predict what the consequences actually are of the drug interactions of 13 different medications that somebody might be taking at age 75. And so it's very important when you have these complicated procedures that are going on and complicated attempts to eradicate or reduce the incidence of the medical problem. Those are the kind of things that we've classically seen. And we were describing the big data and little data issues. There's also the opportunity of middle-sized data, which is the possibilities of, with the patient's permission, of instrumenting a house to determine how often a person is going to the refrigerator, or how often the person is going to the bathroom, or how often how well the person is sleeping at night, and how much exercise they're actually getting.
I read that you recently had your eyes on the VISTA system at the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we talked during the break about some possibilities there. What are some spaces in the VA, for example, where you see the ability to maybe try some of the solutions that you're talking about in this paper? Maybe not specific ways, but just places where you see the potential there.
Well, a couple of obvious ones, I think, would be to start off with thinking about obesity and diabetes and the opportunity to make behavioral changes, eat different foods, drink different liquids, and get proper exercise, or maybe a lot more exercise than they're accustomed to actually receiving, and finding ways to reward the veterans for participating in such activities and for sharing their data at whatever level of resolution might be deemed appropriate.
The first question in that I would anticipate from somebody is, well, we don't have the money to do that, to do any kind of special additional programs. But as we talked about earlier, we're seeing, especially in the private sector, company after company after company demonstrating a return on investment by looking at wellness programs as opposed to just fixing people up when they get sick. So it strikes me that it probably wouldn't be really hard to develop some kind of a return on investment projection for what somebody would see at a federal agency. Is it fair to say, do you think?
Absolutely. I don't have the data in my head, but I have read a number of studies recently where large companies have made investments in wellness and have seen dramatic differences in their health downstream healthcare costs. So it's a quality of life, but it's also it makes good business sense.
In fact, the Milken report that's referenced in the document that's about 5 years old now, actually, is about a 200-page report with all the analytics that you might want to discover in terms of not only what does it cost to make some of these changes, what are the expected benefits, not only in direct medical costs that we're talking about, but also the other economic costs to the economy of being sick and unable to work, for example.
That's included in the links, in the footnotes, in the links, and we have this entire work linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's titled Improving Population Wellness and Reducing Growth in Healthcare Costs. And you have some recommendations here that are specifically directed at the federal government. We're going to talk about those when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today, Ann Reed and Tom Love, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, bangs, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stop. To it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at washingtonwizards.com/tickets.
Are you a federal employee or government contractor? FederalNewsRadio.com is the best source for news that helps you do your job better. Our news team brings you the latest on federal pay and benefits, technology, defense, retirement, acquisition, and the federal budget as it's happening. FederalNewsRadio.com gives a voice to the federal community. Read and hear interviews with federal leaders, members of Congress, and industry. Find it all at FederalNewsRadio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up for our breaking news email alerts.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today talking about the Institute for Innovation from ACT-IACS, product improving population wellness and reducing growth in healthcare costs, Ann Reed and Tom Love. And I mentioned you have a number of recommendations in here directly relating to the federal government. And the first of those is increased visibility and accountability for federal employee health. And Ann, you alluded to this earlier. The paper says empowering nearly 2.5 million federal employees with simple tools to support patient-driven behavioral changes can make a big difference in the government's annual spending on personnel fringe benefits. And one of the subheads here in this is entitled OPM and DOD should increase their commitment to a wellness program. Now, the implication there is they have wellness programs in place, and I've talked to folks from both agencies about their wellness programs in the past. But you would like to see more of a commitment to those and maybe make them more front and center, maybe highlight them more? Is that what you're getting at
here? Definitely. I think giving that there are existing programs, they should be given more attention. And I'm not so sure that but what those programs have been focused on as being sort of a nice to have, let's do something nice for the employee kind of thing, rather than viewed by the management as a serious tool for improving not just the workforce quality of life, but the cost containment downstream.
As I think about where those programs probably live in the agency structure, I think about
the HR department instead of the finance department.
Well, and even within the HR department, probably down a notch or two rather than at the chief human capital officer's level, which is what it sounds to me, and like you're saying, that's where the emphasis and the push should be coming from rather than from a wellness or work life or something like that, somebody like that.
I would agree with that. I would fully support bringing much more attention, and then also being able to use the macro data and being able to track the impact of that. Because right now, without having any mechanism to show the impact, it just becomes a cost, mm-hmm. right? Not the investment that we see that it should be.
Now, you mentioned, Tom, the fact that this is in the CHCO's office and not the CFO's office. But as when you mention it that way and think about it, and when I think about it in the context of the way we've discussed it, you could make a pretty solid argument, I guess, that a wellness program should live in the CFO's portfolio. Tell me more about that approach.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if you, again, I'm referring back to the Milken report. If you look at that, they very carefully analyze how little it costs actually to make substantial changes in this particular area and the magnitude of the savings that accrue at the organization scale. And we talked about this hour after hour, day after day, week after week, month after month, quickly realized that the wrong idea is to make a specific recommendation other than to say, thou shalt be doing something and thou shalt be measuring the results and sharing the resulting information.
You were pushing people in a direction but not giving them a specific destination, it sounds like.
We described it as an outside-the-beltway suggestion as contrast to an inside-the-beltway suggestion.
Now, the second recommendation is leveraging information technology to enhance and extend agency wellness programs. And there's one particular aspect I wanted to ask you about. This report says many federal employees are already active on various social media websites for both personal and professional use. Federal government can create surveys distributed through social media to gather important anonymous information on employee health care concerns, and it goes on to explain the reasons behind that. It strikes me that One of the go-to solutions in information technology as a whole now is collecting information through social media. What is our sense right now of how well we can extrapolate that information over the entire cohort of people, whoever that cohort happens to be?
Well, I think the finding that has come about in the last few years is the realization that people are more likely to make significant behavioral changes based upon their friends' or relatives' suggestion than their doctor's suggestion. So if you go to the doctor for your annual physical and the doctor tells you the usual stuff, don't eat so much, exercise more, and eat an apple a day, you're likely to come home and continue doing exactly what you did before the examination. By contrast, if your brother or your golfing buddy or or one of your children says, gee, I've discovered this new bicycle, and I only seem to have to ride it about 3 miles a day, and I've lost 40 pounds, and everything else has improved. You ought to get one, too. You're much more likely to rush out and get one of those bicycles to try to, you know, catch up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
And social media can sort of facilitate exactly that process is the point.
Okay, and that... That's an interesting dynamic, and as I think about it, how it applies to my personal life, I certainly can agree with it. I had an appointment, my last checkup, and I was fortunate to be able to show the doctor I'd lost 20 pounds. And she said, how did you do it? And I said, I did what you told me to the last time I was here. And she looked at me like I was from another planet, as if to say,
that's never happened before.
Nobody does that. I don't understand why you did that. And I thought, well, it's because I'm paying my deductible plus whatever my health insurance company
pays. There's another thing we discovered in this process that I found quite interesting is that the vast majority of the people that get medical services have no idea what those services actually cost. So they don't know that if they're being told to go in for a heart bypass operation, that that's a $150,000 bill as long as there's no complications, in which case it's a lot more.
You have one more recommendation here that I want to talk about, and we'll do that when we come back to wrap up on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tom Love and Ann Reed are my guests today, part of ACT-IAC's Quadrennial Government Technology Review Process, and you can learn more later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll wrap up in just a moment.
Here's Brian Dixon, Data Center Consolidation Program Lead, USDA, on the path to FDCCI compliance panel sponsored by Thundercat Technology and NetApp.
At USDA, we're going to endeavor to move people to a most efficient environment for their applications, because until we can identify what storage we're using and we can standardize, until we can do that, you can't get to the next step.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, keyword FDCCI.
Is your agency on track for data center consolidation compliance? Data center experts at Thundercat Technology can help you consolidate, relocate, and maximize your data center assets. By leveraging NetApp Agile storage solutions and proprietary consolidation tools, Thundercat helps agencies achieve compliance and cut costs by up to 50%. To get help with your data center migration strategy, go to FDCCIConnect.com to download the FDCCI strategy guide today. FDCCIConnect.com.
Active families, active kids. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Kids have a lot of energy, but may not always be motivated to be active. However, when parents are active, kids are more likely to join in. Shelley Full is Executive Director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Kids do what we do, not what we say.
Playing active video games is one way to burn calories.
Choosing games for your family where the entire family can be utilizing that gaming system, getting that quality family time, and being active together, what's better than that?
Parents and kids alike can start making activity a habit by earning their Presidential Active Lifestyle Award, also known as PALA Plus. The Plus incorporates good nutrition practices.
We encourage you to be active 30 minutes a day for adults, 60 minutes for kids, 5 days a week for 6 weeks.
Learn more at fitness.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
So just how many ships can one ship be? Many.
thanks to LPD Flight 2. Designed by the shipbuilders at Huntington Ingalls Industries, this next generation in the proven LPD class will provide America with a common hull ship for multiple missions. A ship that's built for flexibility, survivability, and affordability. Now that's innovation. Find out more at HuntingtonIngalls.com today. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right.
Working together, keeping the nation safe, is the focus of ASSEA's 12th annual Homeland Security event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt Washington. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will dialogue on cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Register to attend or exhibit at AFSEA.org, keyword homeland. That's AFSEA.org, keyword homeland.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation today revolving around the work of ACT-IAC's Institute for Innovation, Improving Population Wellness and Reducing Growth in Healthcare Costs. And you can read it linked today later at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Tom Love and Ann Reed in studio with me. And we've talked about two of the three recommendations so far. The third one is providing leadership in driving a wellness agenda among other employers. That's a recommendation for the federal government. And you've now touched on this a couple of times, but why is it that you think the federal government is a pivotal player here in dispersing this information and being a leader among employers, including employers in the private sector?
I think the government has a sort of a policy incentive to reduce the cost of healthcare. And at the same time, the government is the largest employer in the United States, plus that, and that doesn't count all the, as we were talking earlier, the veterans and other populations that are directly impacted. So the government touches a lot of people. Providing the leadership modeling behavior that is proved successful for other large businesses will also help smaller organizations to implement similar kinds of programs. And they have the additionally, government has the capability to capture that longer macro data and show the direct impact.
And be able to do something with it once they've got it. I mean, we, as I said earlier, we talked about big data on any number of occasions, but the piece of it that the agencies still are figuring out to some degree is the analytics part of it, that once you have it, what do you do with it?
We've been doing work with the Department of Veteran Affairs since 2005, and we talked about the VISTA system, and people think about the VISTA system as being important from an electronic medical records perspective. Actually, what's incredibly important, and I've been telling my good friends at VA this for a while, is that it's the data that they've captured by that system that is the goldmine, because they have been capturing data on about 6 million people a year out of a population of what used to be 27 million. I think the current number is around 25 million. Veterans that are that have been served or could potentially be served by Department of Veteran Affairs.
This there's a lot of material here, and I encourage anybody that's interested in it to go and to federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later today, and we'll have a link to this this entire thing. It's 19 pages, I believe, so it's very manageable. I actually read it during halftime yesterday, I have to confess.
You didn't watch Beyonce?
I missed. Well, we had a discussion about that in the newsroom here, and that's not really my cup of tea. This is much more up
now,
my alley.
Now, if you said you read it during the blackout.
Well, you didn't mention the fact that we originally wanted to title this The Perfect Storm. And then it turned out that the day in which we were going to present this
right.
in Williamsburg, the perfect storm had actually arrived there and the meeting had to be canceled.
That's right. It actually hit. I was actually in Williamsburg already when that happened and we all started heading back toward D.C. But as I got to the end of this, I noticed it's easy for me to say this, that, Tom, your team put this together and you worked on this together, but there's 14 names here, so this was really a group effort. Tell me about the group that worked together to put this to put this out?
Well, it was very much a group effort, and it included tiny little companies and gigantic companies and people that come from IT only backgrounds and people that come from medical backgrounds. Although that was a distinct minority. These were largely people that are involved in communications, involved in application development, involved in all the system integration tasks that are typically occur inside
the
Beltway.
And I'll add all volunteers.
Yes, all volunteers and lots of hours and lots of work and lots of drafts were put together and lots of really good discussions. And we made a serious effort to let everybody be involved and participate. And we kept time and attendance to be sure that they actually did show up.
Well, you're tough. You're a tough customer.
The only way you get done.
And what do you want people to take away from this one in particular, but from this series of QGTR work as a whole?
I think the broader thing that we want people to take away is that yes, the nation has some large and seemingly intractable problems, but what we want to show through these papers is that the use of technology, whether it's big data or little data, can be brought to bear to help reshape and solve and address some of these problems.
I appreciate both of you being here today. Tom, it's great to meet you. Ann, it is great to see you again. Thank you both for coming in. This work, it will be linked up, as I mentioned, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The next hour of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And later this afternoon, we'll archive this conversation on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth also.